Well, good morning, Alan. First of all, to you and all of your listeners. Yes, I've heard that criticism in terms of Shannon Airports and other airports, let it be said. And I know that there is enormous anxiety across the aviation sector and all others that rely on it, that things have been slow and that it's been more about producing reports than producing results. Let me just give you our perspective and one of the frustrations that we have encountered. For a long time, we have been calling on government to explore and to use, for example, antigen testing and other methods to examine how you reopen travel and aviation in a safe and a sustainable way. And one of the things that has been alarming, and we've seen it again now, Alan, in terms of the reopening of hospitality, is that the government seems to leave things very much to the last minute, as though postponing decisions will in somehow change, you know, the context or change the realities in which we are all living. And I know that frustration has been very clearly expressed. I mean, we had pilots and others outside the convention centre, where, as you know, the Dáil has been meeting up until the summer. So that frustration has been very clearly expressed by those affected, and the core frustration with the way in which this government goes about its business, let me tell you, is recorded and articulated week in, week out in the Dáil. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have landed with the government, because it's still a government that is very much about speculation, kite flying, thinking out loud in a way that's very often extremely unhelpful, and not having internally its ducks in a row, its work done, and a clear plan. Because in my experience, Alan, in very difficult circumstances, what people need is a sense of sure-footedness, a sense of good planning, and above all else, clarity. People can deal with difficult circumstances if and only if they are given clarity, and if there is a sense that there are people in charge who actually know what they're doing and who are carrying out their jobs in an orderly fashion. And unfortunately, that's not the case with the current administration.
Do you think there's sure-footedness and clarity around both Shannon Airport and Aer Lingus, saying that they're committed to the key routes, Heathrow and the US?
Well, look, I think there is a reality here that needs to dawn on all of us policymakers and service providers in aviation and beyond, and that is we live on an island, and our interconnectedness with the rest of the world is absolutely critical for us, for our economy to function, and also for our society to function. So notwithstanding the trauma, and I describe it as a trauma, that the aviation sector and others, hospitality and others, and people in Clare will be well versed in all of that. The job now is to rebuild, and I don't foresee a situation where we would return to an Ireland that is less connected than we were pre-COVID. I think the ambition has to be not just to restore the connectivity, but actually to build on it. Because bear in mind, Alan, we are dealing now, we are emerging into the light of a world that is now COVID or post-COVID at some stage, but also Brexit and post-Brexit. And so the connectivity of our small island with the outer world is absolutely crucial. And transport and aviation as part of that has always been a strategic sector, but I would argue now more so than ever.
Aer Lingus CEO Lynn Embleton said recently that any funding from the government to help them out, that it could not contain a commitment to retain the cabin crew base at Shannon Airport. Do you think if the government is to hand over any money to aid Aer Lingus, that should be a requirement?
Well, yes, and I think that there has to be an understanding by and a positive, constructive relationship between any company, and Aer Lingus is no different, and the state in respect of developing regional hubs. Of course, running the business is the business of Aer Lingus, but protecting regional infrastructure and jobs ought to be their business too, and it's certainly the business of the government and the state. And I don't know how you would achieve the objectives that I've described to you of ensuring and building on our connectivity without having the full complement of staff and crew at Shannon. So Shannon Airport is a strategic piece of our infrastructure, not just for the region, not just for its immediate environs, but for the entire island. So I think government policy and a huge effort needs to be put in to secure jobs, and not alone that, not to stand still, but to actually develop that hub and, in fact, to have more employment, not less. And Aer Lingus needs to play their part in it. And can I say, for taxpayers, whose money the government dispenses, bear in mind, it is taxpayers' money, would, of course, expect that any state funding contributes to a plan and a strategy that protects jobs, that maintains crew, and that sets to grow, not to shrink, the capacity.
Okay, if I can turn to one of the major issues of the moment, which is, of course, indoor dining, and we expect indoor hospitality to resume by next Monday. We've spoken recently, Mary Lou, on the show with local restaurateurs and publicans, and they've some concerns over this. The government should have given the industry guidelines sooner than they have or will. The checking of IDs and certificates, they're not overly happy at the prospect of checking them, and especially not having to do it at the tables. They'd rather do it at the door because it could lead to some fractious scenarios. Counter service, publicans feel, should be part of the guidelines. But another key issue in relation to the resumption of indoor dining is staffing. A lot of them have lost members of staff to other industries, and one of them said to us yesterday that the lure of the PUP is too much for some of them to come back to work. You know, why would you come back for 450, 500 euro a week when you can get 350 for doing nothing?
Well, maybe let me start with that one first, because
I suppose should financial supports be cut to encourage people to come back?
Well, look, for so long as business is closed and the state and public health guidelines mean that people can't go back to work, when you're in that situation, if you're one of those workers or businesses, well, then the state has to support you. So, no, there shouldn't be a premature reduction or shutting down of supports for businesses or for workers who can't reopen their business or who can't return to work. That, to me, is a simple matter of fairness, quite frankly, and common sense. In fact, the departmental figures don't reflect that people on the PUP are sitting at home and not willing to go back to work. In fact, the figures that the state has collected reflect something very different, that people are going back to work in great numbers. There is an anxiety, however, I think, amongst a section of the workforce that they might return to work, and that there might be another flare-up, or there might be another situation where they can't go back to work and they find themselves on reduced income. I have heard people reflect that, but the evidence doesn't support that assertion that people are claiming the PUP and don't want to go back to work. My experience is that they do. I do, however, absolutely agree with the restaurateurs and publicans and others who are frustrated at the way in which the government has handled the return to indoor dining. And let's just say at the outset, and to be clear for your listeners, I accept absolutely that we have lived through extraordinarily difficult circumstances for everyone, and it's difficult to be in government at a time like this. So I absolutely acknowledge and accept that. But I think what we have seen in terms of the last minute disorganised and sometimes chaotic approach to things is really alarming. So we now have a situation where there is a dispute, it seems, between the Attorney General and members of Cabinet in respect of regulations and points of clarity and so on. And all of this, it speaks, I think, to just a slowness and a lack of good order in government. And we saw it from the beginning of this crisis, when you might have understood it because we were dealing with something new and we were in an emergency situation. But at this point in time, there's really no excuse for it. Mm. And the approach that the government is adopting when indoor dining resumes, it is going to be very, very difficult. I mean, and very, very difficult to enforce. It's still unclear as of yet. Do the Gardaí have a role in it? How does it work? You're asking pubs and restaurants and staff to inquire as to people's health status, their vaccination status. It's divisive. You have people who aren't vaccinated, young staff challenging people who are or who are not. It's just a mess. Our view from the beginning was reopening indoor dining should not have been based on your vaccine status, but rather on your COVID status. So the use of PCR testing and antigen testing to establish whether or not somebody was infected or not was a much more even-handed and a much easier way to administer things. Okay. And also practical things, Alan, like the standard of ventilation in the premises and so on. That's really where the focus should have been. Government wasn't minded to listen to that. And now we find ourselves in this situation. And I have spoken to some restaurateurs who have told me that, in fact, they're just going to stick with outdoor dining because they don't support the approach by government and they're not sure how they would administer it in their establishment. So they just think it's more straightforward to stick what they have up and running now. So that's not a good outcome because people need to get back to work and we need, you know, we need to get some sense of normality, and hospitality is a key sector, obviously, for the economy in its totality.
Okay, I just want to move on to your visit to Clare yesterday. You visited a homeowner affected by pyrite in Kilkishan. You were accompanied by Dr. Martina Cleary from the Clare Pyrite Action Group. Obviously, they're trying to be included in the government's redress scheme. Dr. Cleary feels that the number of homes affected by pyrite could be much higher than the 52 who've come forward. I'm sure you would fully support their campaign to be included on that redress scheme.
Yes, absolutely. And we were in the home of Teresa and Danny Maloney, and I just wanted to thank them for receiving us. And we met Martina Cleary and members of the Action Group were also there. Violet Ann Wynne, the Sinn Féin TD for Clare, was also with me and is working on this issue. And yes, I mean, there is absolutely no fair rationale for excluding these homes from the defective concrete blocks grant scheme. And I know that the campaign is anxious that they be included there, but I also know that they are anxious that the full extent of redress and support that will be required is recognised and delivered. And I can only say to Alan, and I visited homes that have been damaged by pyrite, by mica now, on many, many occasions. And it's just a devastating situation for a family when their home, their place of sanctuary, where they, you know, invest their money and their blood, sweat and tears to pay for the roof over their head, raise their families, and then to discover that the blocks are defective and literally your home is crumbling around you, it's very hard. It's not just the damage done to the house, to the material building, which is awful, but it's the knock-on consequences for the families. And we need to understand that your home is your security. Your home is the place where certainly, you know, at all stages in your life, but for many people affected in County Clare, they're at a point where they have either retired or they're about to retire. And this is the last thing that they need in their life. And I think there's real frustration, anger and hurt, let me say, that these families feel that they haven't been heard. And Martina told me yesterday that she does believe that the extent of this problem is more widespread than may have been appreciated across County Clare. So we need to get a good read of what the situation is, and then we need full redress for these families. And we've pursued these matters in Donegal and Mayo and in Clare. And if the government thinks this is going away, this is not going away. The campaigners were very clear on that point.
You also visited the Northwest Clare Family Resource Centre in Ennis-Dyman, and we spoke to them recently on the show. They were highlighting the issues around Ireland, being the poor relation in terms of funding childcare in Europe, also the high cost of childcare here, in contrast to the poor pay conditions for the staff who have to go through college to get their necessary qualifications and then enter an industry where conditions aren't great. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, and we had a very, very good meeting with the Family Resource Centre in Ennis-Dyman, and it is an incredible set of services that have come together, as you say, childcare, also supports for the community in terms of just general well-being. I'm conscious that that mental health and people feeling isolated or just out of sorts or anxious in these times has been very, very acute. So can I commend them and everyone else across the county who has just been so good to your neighbours and to your community. And we talked about that issue, Alan, of childcare. And this is an issue in every community across the country because we're not recognising the huge level of qualifications of childcare staff. In many instances, you have highly qualified professional childcare providers who are signing on during the summer months and then coming back to work again in the autumn. It's crazy. We need to move beyond a situation where childcare is nearly regarded as babysitting. And we need to understand, as every parent does, that good childcare, it's about early childhood education, it's about the socialisation of the child and so on. And really, we need to shift the dial and we need to change the model. And we produced in advance of the last election a very comprehensive plan that could be implemented in the course of a term of government where you would have the state intervene and early childhood education be actually recognised as a full public service. Okay. And we believe that needs to happen. And by the way, just to creche owners and providers, we believe we can do this in a way that still allows for a huge amount of flexibility for childcare providers. It's not about Big Brother or the state coming in with a heavy hand and disrupting services that are great quality, excellent services. It is about supporting that provision for the workers and professionals, but ultimately, Alan, for the children. Okay. But ultimately, that's where the focus needs to be.
Okay, I just have one last question, or really a two-in-one question, Mary Lou. Obviously, Sinn Féin doing pretty well in any number of recent opinion polls since the last general election, either top or just behind Fine Gael. When do you think the next general election will be? And what do you make of the pressure that seems to be there on Micheál Martin from within his own party and rumours of a motion of no confidence in him as leader of Fianna Fáil?
Well, now there's two great questions.
And I'm hoping for two great answers.
Well, let me see what I can muster. So as regards the general election, the truth is that no one can be sure about that. I mean, for the last while, because of the pandemic, there was a sense that you couldn't have an election, obviously, because public health and safety had to come first. But I think as we emerge now, please God, touch wood, from the pandemic, I think then the prospect of an election becomes real. And as far as I am concerned, the sooner the better, because we need a new government. I watch with just utter frustration at the mismanagement of many things, but perhaps housing in particular. We're watching the same mistakes playing out with our eyes wide open in slow motion all over again. It's scandalous. But to be honest, Alan, I can't tell you when the next election. And then Micheál Martin, I mean, that ultimately is for Fianna Fáil to figure out. I mean, that's their business. And I'm sure I am probably the last person on earth that Fianna Fáil or Micheál Martin wants any advice or guidance from on any issue, but particularly this one, Alan.
Okay, and on that note, we'll leave it there. Sinn Féin President Mary Lou MacDonald, thanks so much for joining us on Morning Focus.
Talking to you. Slán leat.